Welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 409 for Wednesday, the 11th of June, 2014. My name is Jim Race. I am here in the Northern California, a little bit closer to where Jules lives at the moment. With me, I have Perry Lloyd over in the something shirt.
Canterbury. I'm not Kent, but that's not a shirt, but whatever. Yeah, how's it going? Everything good over in the Americas?
Yeah, it's actually lovely weather. I am in a relatively stable place at the moment to stay, which is nice. I've been here almost 2 months, but trying to get everything obviously still together to have a perfect little Motopod studio. I should take a picture of this. I think the listeners would be amused. It's pretty
good
funny.
Stuff. Well, I'm sure if you do get around to that, that'll be on the Motopod Twitter, which is @moto_pod. So
I believe it would be. And you guys have been taking great care of that, and I do appreciate that. Do you use TweetDeck?
No, I don't use TweetDeck. I use TweetBot, but I saw that TweetDeck had some horrible, horrible thing happen to it.
Yeah, they did. It could have been worse. I think they more got pranked than anything else. But I know a lot of journalists use TweetDeck to keep up with things that are going on. We do have a couple of interviews for you, and I'm not going to name them. We'll throw them into the middle of the show, and of course that information and who they are will be in the show notes when the show comes out. So I can tell you that these are a couple of TT riders, which fits well into the theme of what we're going to be talking about today, which I think is cool. We had a little bit of listener feedback, didn't we, Harry?
Yeah, the last couple of weeks we've been getting a lot of listener feedback, which is always good to have. And much like we did last week, we're going to read out a fair amount of it. There's a fair bit of listener feedback to get to, but luckily there wasn't too much racing on last weekend. So we'll have time to really talk about all the listener feedback. And as always, if you want to send any listener feedback, be it related to the show, anything we've talked about on the show, or just a general question or feedback, the email address to send that to is motopod@motopodcast.com. And that obviously goes to every host, as some people, such as Philip Johnny's, learnt some of the replies from the hosts can be quite long. I think it was Philip and I think it was Martin who had, I think their email exchange was something like 8,000 words. I went to paste it into to the show notes, and yeah, had to delete that pretty quick because it was just too long. So yeah. So Philip Johnny's, we did get your emails, and I managed to read through most of them, but unfortunately it's a bit too long for the show.
And back to the matter is, the way Martin ended up being on the show was writing us novellas, so which is kind of funny. You know, something that's been missing from the show for a while, and since I am here you go.
All I have is a carton of apple juice, unfortunately.
Are you going to open it for us, Harry?
Sure, I can open the apple juice.
There.
I just opened it and managed to drop the lid, so that was excellent.
We may have to save that for future episodes. Want to put a quick thanks out to everybody that has donated to the show, as well as the regular subscribers. You guys are helping us out immensely. If you would like to help support Motopod, you can do so by going to www.motopodcast.com. On the left-hand side of the page, about halfway down, are a couple of yellow buttons. You can either make a one-time donation, or you can set up a regular monthly subscription with the amount of your choosing. So once again, thank you to everybody that does that. It's very, very cool. And you guys help keep us running. Things like Jules and I Dave's going to be at Snetterton this weekend. Jules and I will be at Laguna Seca World Superbike in a couple of weeks now. And we need to send Harry off somewhere. And we're sending Martin all the way to Qatar. yeah, that's very, very cool. Listener feedback, and grab yourselves a refreshing beverage, folks, because this is long and in-depth. And Harry, I'm going to let you start. And it's kind of a ping-pong match of opinions here, so I like it.
Yeah, so the emails we have this week range from everything from the Marco Simoncelli Hall of Fame to the TT to some people's thoughts on the Moto2 class. So there's no real particular order with the emails, so we'll just start. So this first email is from Ruben de Punier, I like the name. I'm guessing it's not the person's real name, but anyway, good name. Clearly they enjoy crashing. So, their email goes, with so many MotoGP seats up for grabs, I thought there would be way more silly season chatter by now. What's going on? So that was first line. Next line. Marco Simoncelli was a legend no matter how you slice it. Imagine the GP grid with him still on it now. I looked up the paint jobs you guys talked about. There's no accounting for taste. Harry, at least your anime bike looked like it belonged in a Japanese race. Dave, your Hondas looked sort of club level. So I'm sure Dave will be very happy about that. P.S. My biggest disappointment this racing season has been Moto 2 in general. Entirely missable. Rider-wise, what the hell happened to Nakagami and Tyrol? A very close second has to be the loss of the Laguna round. Sad. Keep up the great work, Ruben de Punier. So, in response to Ruben's email, I have prepared quite a long analysis of the current view of silly season. So, Jim, if you care to scroll down the page, you'll eventually find that. It's just below the news.
I'm going silly season. All right.
Okay. So, what we'll do is we'll go through each of the teams that are either there for next year or potentially there for next year and kind of talk about it. I've written up this list. So, Jim, feel free to jump in with your opinions. This is just kind of how I view the silly season and, you know, things I've heard / seen, all that sort of jazz.
All right.
So the first team is Ducati. They're obviously going to want to keep one Italian. Andrea Dovizioso could stay, but he's had contact with Suzuki. Ducati have said that they still want him. Cal Crutchlow, he has a 2-year contract, so he still has another year on his contract, but there is the rumour of the break clause. So both of them could potentially leave. I don't really see either of them leaving. Maybe Dovi will defect to Suzuki, but I think Suzuki's quite a big risk at this second.
I think they're the total wild card right now, frankly.
Yeah, definitely. They could potentially have an all-new rider lineup, and, you know, they could make some big pulls like Jorge Lorenzo, as kind of always has been rumoured to have a big money offer from Ducati. So that could really shake things up.
No, I'm saying I think Suzuki is a big wild card.
Oh, you think?
Yeah.
Yeah, Dan,
nobody knows what their potential is. The testing they've been doing, like with Laverty and Dupuignet down at PI, they were very hush-hush about that.
I think that's because they both crashed.
Well, but I mean, you know they're still doing stuff at their test track in Japan. Which is their test track? I forget. It's
I can't remember. Eugene Laverty said it, and it wasn't a track that I'd heard of.
Are they in Hamamatsu, or is that Kawasaki?
I'm not sure. I'd have to check.
Okay. Anyway, they have a private test track. They may come in upper mid-pack or mid-pack, but I have a feeling that it seems to me like they have a solid commitment right now. And Eugene wouldn't be testing with them if they didn't. So, frankly, people discount Dupuignet right now. The guy went out on a high note. You got to remember that. I think he's a very solid test rider. I wouldn't be surprised if they surprise us when they come in.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to see how they do.
Yep.
But also, in potential contention for those Ducati seats, Stefan Bradl has always kind of been in the eye of Ducati ever since Audi purchased them, you know, the whole German connection.
Yep.
So he's potentially one. And then, of course, Andrea Iannone. He's obviously been set up to be the new Ducati kid. So if Andrea Dovizioso leaves, then I'd guess that Iannone would almost immediately fill that Ducati factory seat. But Iannone, like Dovizioso, has had contact with Suzuki. So who knows what could happen.
They used Iannone and contact in the same sentence.
Yeah.
All right. Want me to carry on with Yamaha?
Yeah, go for Yamaha.
This is factory Yamaha. Rossi is going to be staying another 2 years, or Harry will drink enough of the VR46 Monster energy drink to throw up and film it. I missed the press conference so far today. I heard that he talked about that in detail.
He kind of mentioned it. He just said that they were well into talking about a 2-year contract and that things were looking optimistic. So everything seems to be suggesting that, yes, there will be a 2-year deal. They just haven't finalized it yet.
Well, and I heard he also went into detail on his new energy drink.
Yeah, there was a there was a Monster Energy Q&A session, and Rossi, he's obviously sponsored by Monster, so he did a bit of it, and a lot of it was spent talking about his new energy drink.
Yep. Did you, as an aside, did you read the bit that David Emmett wrote yesterday about the perils of the perils and parallels between tobacco sponsorship and energy drink sponsorship?
Yes, and I had actually written a similar article to that about a year and a half ago, funnily enough.
Okay. And so I'm assuming you thought it was fairly spot on.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely see energy drinks as the new big sponsor. I find it very interesting, kind of the difference between Red Bull and Monster in just how they approach their marketing, you know? I think that Red Bull goes for a slightly more older and maybe perhaps, I don't know if elite's the right word, but kind of just a fancier, kind of, they're trying to portray a fancier lifestyle, whereas Monster's definitely going for that party boy, more party boy lifestyle with a lot more Monster girls and, you know, a jacuzzi truck and all that sort of stuff.
Well, you remember it was about a year ago now, or a year and a half ago now, that I went on that Monster junket to Aspen.
Mm.
Yeah, I got that. That was, and it was very much oriented towards the kids' lifestyle. Anyway, carrying on, Lorenzo will probably end up staying. Maybe we'll see. Rumored opinions, though, of possibly Ducati and possibly Honda. As you say, Harry, all of that's going to be about money and probably where he finishes out the season, I think.
Ducati's, he'd obviously be moving there much the same reason as Cal was, just for the huge money and for the potential that they could turn it around. The Honda deal could go through, but if I were Honda, Pedrosa seems like a safe bet. Lorenzo seems like he could be a bit of an unknown on the Honda, so.
Yeah. We'll have to see. I mean, the Honda is fairly stable. Let's get to that right now. Why don't you go?
Okay, so, yeah, Repsol Honda. Obviously, Marc Marquez has signed for another year. I can't see him moving from Repsol Honda in the foreseeable future. So the big question mark is over Danny Pedrosa. He's already had some contact with Suzuki, and his response to Suzuki was, okay, I'll ride for you for 8 million euros, which is a lot of money, and I don't think that Suzuki quite have that amount of money. So, yeah, Pedrosa's options are kind of stay at Repsol Honda, or maybe he goes to LCR or something, but I personally don't see him moving. He's ridden that bike for so long, he's basically almost a guaranteed top three finish, certainly a top four finish in the world standings. Lorenzo spent his whole career on the Yamaha. That move over to the Repsol Honda with a different riding style could potentially be risky, and bringing in Lorenzo I think also creates a lot more tension between him and Mark. Lorenzo classically has not enjoyed being the secondary rider in the team, and I think that Pedrosa puts up a lot less friction to Marquez, but that's just my view.
I think you're probably pretty much spot on. Onto the team that probably is garnering the most talk in the paddock and the media center right now, which is interesting because they're not even in the field or on the paddock yet.
Yeah, last year I'd heard that they were meant to do a wild card at Barcelona this weekend, but clearly that hasn't happened.
But that being said, we still have plenty of the season to go, more than half.
Yeah, that's true.
And I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't see them out there, perhaps at say Motegi.
Yeah, Japan would probably be a good place.
Yep. That means you can fly in parts very quickly. The Suzuki squad, the future Suzuki squad, the names, and I agree with all these, Harry. Some of them, actually, I appreciate your notes on it. Eugene Laverty. And you say it's Harry's hot pick, probably mine too. Obviously, with Suzuki having him do testing, Eugene being currently aligned with Suzuki and having some former ties with them back in his BSB days, I think this is a distinct possibility. And it's from a financial perspective for Suzuki, they probably wouldn't have to pay him a whole hell of a lot, because Eugene hasn't in the past made all that much money fighting for teams. And so I think it's a match made in heaven if the bike is going to be performing up to a standard that Eugene will be happy with, because he has ridden for some shite teams in the past. and he was never happy when he was doing it. I think that that might be a distinct possibility. The other one that we were talking about earlier would be Crazy Joe. I like that. Ianone. A outside chance, but I've heard a few more whispers on this one right now. I think that would be an interesting team combo, if you will, Laverty and Joe. Elias Espargaró, he's kind of on everybody's radar right now. And am wondering where he's going to go. I mean, he's definitely make a step up to a factory squad somewhere. Or a factory supported squad. Where is going to be an interesting, you know, conundrum and quandary? I don't know. We'll have to see. Usually when we find things out more and more, right now we're not jumping the gun on silly season, because frankly silly season starts during the prior season now. But you know, summer break is when most everything is revealed, at least, you know, maybe not announced but revealed. Indy is where things actually start getting ironed out. Alex Lowe's a distinct possibility. I think a lot of that depends on how his season goes this year. That could be interesting. Bradley Smith, is this contract good through the end of this year? I thought he had an opportunity for another year.
I'm not sure. The only contract I know about is that he had the 1 year in Moto2 with the 2 years in GP. I don't know if there was an extension clause in that.
I think part of that was, and I think he did, but part of that was dependent upon both his and Herbe's satisfaction with his running. And he's doing okay, I think. Dominic Egerton, that would be an interesting one. He's hot and cold, as you well know.
He's the kind of the definition of a Moto2 rider. There some weekends, not there other weekends.
Right. We don't have. Do you have a bat anywhere in here?
Yeah, going down.
Okay. All right. Right. And then Hopkins. Now, Hopkins has a lifelong love affair with Suzuki. Raced for them for many years in MotoGP. But everybody, I won't put it that way. There's always kind of a question mark over his head. These days, typically has to do with his health. Because the guy has been bruised and battered. He's kind of the modern Gary McCoy, if you will. He's back in BSB this year with a good squad, and if his results go well, I can see perhaps him being pulled back in. Do you know, and I don't, besides Davide Brivio, have any idea who or what the team structure going on down might be? Has there been any word on that?
No, the only person I know is Brivio. Then it's just any video or anything has just been of Japanese mechanics, and I can't see anyone of note immediately from that.
Okay, so I need to remind myself to get a hold of Davide and see if I can get any information out of him. Carry on, sir.
So now we get to the factory, not the factory, the satellite teams. First, we'll start with Pramac Ducati. Andrea Iannone could stay there. Carlo Pernant, as we said last weekend, has kind of told Ducati that if Ducati wants Pramac to keep running Ducatis, they have to take Iannone into the factory team. So that could be tricky. And then yeah, Pramac Ducati, they could really take anyone. It's one of these teams that could get a bit crazy. I imagine Yoni Hernandez will stay another year. He's obviously has money with him, both in sponsorship and from Dorna for being a Colombian rider, and with racing in Brazil next year, that will be helpful to the team. So I'd imagine that he'll stay in some form.
We'll have to see how the World Cup goes.
Yeah, exactly. And then Tech 3, Paul Espargaro. Tech 3 are very keen to keep Paul Espargaro. I imagine he'll stay another year. He's signed for a two-year contract with the Yamaha factory in Japan. So that means that if Jorge Lorenzo were to leave the factory and defect to Honda or Ducati, Paul Espargaro would be the one that I see at least moving up to the factory team to try and get that that next breed of young riders in.
I miss that. Is that a for sure sign?
Yeah, he came up, yeah, because that was the thing, that Bradley Smith's contract was to Tech 3, whereas Paul Espargaro's contract was to Yamaha.
Okay, all right.
Then speaking of Bradley Smith, he might stay another year if they can't find someone quicker. You look at Moto2 and, you know, maybe Tito Rabat's one that they could consider. But, yeah, Bradley Smith, he's a decent rider, he's very hardworking, he's good for PR, and he's getting a lot more popular in the UK, and obviously, fan appeal is somewhat important to them. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what Tech 3 happen. Like with a lot of the teams, it seems like there's one seat that's pretty certain, and then the other seat could kind of go either way.
You know, I would like to see, personally, I would like to see Bradley stay at Tech 3. His debut there was one of the strongest that we've seen. It certainly was stronger than Cal's. Sorry, Cal. His debut year, if you compare the two. This year, he's been pretty solid. Hasn't been throwing it away. I think he's got some solid potential, and certainly better than a bit better than Cal, and better than Colin in his second year, or not Colin, but James Dozlin. He's doing well. I think anybody that discounts what he's doing is probably not paying too much attention. I think his stock is still pretty high.
Yeah. And so then moving on to LCR Honda, the hot rumor is that they will be expanding to a second bike. However, there's no more customer Hondas, so that could get a bit tricky unless Honda decides to expand their program. And LCR have kind of always said that they want an up-and-coming Asian rider to be on their second bike, because obviously the Asian market is hugely important for motorcycling in general, and specifically Honda, and then some of LCR's sponsors, such as Givi, have huge markets over there, so that would obviously be very pleasing to everyone involved in that deal.
So who do we have? I mean, Nakagami, if I had to look at it from last year, would have been the guy.
But this year, not so much.
Yeah. There could be somebody in the... they'd still have to run through Moto2 to prove their worth. Interesting. We'll see.
That seat could be anyone. It could also potentially go to Jonathan Ray, who's, you know, for the past however many years, has kind of been rumoured that Honda want to pull him over to MotoGP after all his loyal years in World Superbike.
Who do we have over there?
Jonathan Ray and Eugene Laverty are the only two riders that I think would go well in GP. Maybe Loris Baz as well. That's just my personal opinion.
Giuliano has spent a lot of time on twins, so that might not be good. But, I mean, he's fire and ice as well.
yeah, definitely.
What else, Sykes?
I don't know. I think Sykes would struggle on a MotoGP bike, to be honest. I think that he's very good on the Kawasaki and World Superbike, but I'm not sure he would transition well to MotoGP. But that's just my feeling.
We should bring him over for a wild card. He's never done one.
But who would he wild card with?
Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm saying he's never done one.
What do you mean?
Tom Sykes has never done a MotoGP wild card, as far as I know.
No, he hasn't, but who would he wildcard with that wouldn't upset Kawasaki in terms of sponsors and stuff?
Sometimes they'll still let you do that. Occasionally.
Maybe. Stefan Bridle, he's maybe not had the best results. He's had solid results, but hasn't really set the world on fire. HRC have never been 100% happy with him. So I don't know if Stefan Bridle will keep his seat another year. From what I heard, Lucio Ceccanello had to fight pretty hard to keep Bridle this year as it was. So, who knows?
who has HRC ever been 100% happy with besides at the current moment? Mark Marquez.
Well, they've been pretty happy with Danny Pedrosa. Maybe not 100%, but pretty happy.
And they, I guess they were ecstatic with Mick Doohan.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Go on with Grassini.
Okay, so Grassini Honda. Bautista, I don't know. You rate Bautista a lot higher than me, I think. I think he's a very solid rider. I just can't really see him keeping that seat for another year. Or like Stefan Bradl. They've both had very solid results, but they haven't had outstanding results, you know?
Well, I think the word that you're really looking for is consistency.
Yeah.
And
yeah, both are known for having a crash or two.
Yeah. on a forum that I'm on, there is an ongoing, and I think it's been going on for a few years now, it's called the Alvaro Bautista Crash Count. And it gets updated immediately when because there's a whole lot of people on there that watch it live, and they'll just mark the turn and the course like 2 minutes after it happens.
I should probably start doing that for Antonelli in Moto 3.
I think they don't pay as much attention, but Alvaro's you can always see it. And frankly, it's a lamentable thread, but there's a lot of people going, oh, damn. Sorry. Jules and I have had Jules actually had a great photo series when he was spending more time at the track shooting. And a lot of his photos were of Alvaro, you know, leaning up against the tire barrier or looking down at his bike, going, oh, he's got some fantastic ones. But, you know, not necessarily the kind of thing that you really want to see. Next up is a team that is going to kind of be up in the air, and we will have to see. This is a team that runs deep throughout the entire field. I mean, if you think about it.
Yeah, and they've gone from kind of being one of the leading teams, especially in Moto 2 and Moto 3, to kind of being not so leading anymore.
Yep. I mean, when they decided to tackle all three classes, I tipped my hat. I'm like, well done. Now, at the time, what I was thinking was, I hope you didn't bite off more than you can chew, and that was back in when we were rolling into this, kind of rolling into the CRT era, which was one of those, you know, shoulder shrugging things at the same time. They picked up Nicky Hayden, which I think was probably, you know, a good idea. A man nearing the end of his prime, not there yet, but stepping off of a bike that was proven winner, or well, I take it back, stepping off of a bike prior to the bike that he was on that was a proven winner, onto the Ducati, which at the time was a bit of a slug. And even with Rossi coming over, the bike did not improve until Ducati made major changes, and of course we're seeing the results of that this year. Not quite there yet, but certainly a damn fast bike. And you're right. It all depends upon what happens. I don't believe it's a scaphoid that Nicky hurt in his wrist.
It's apparently arthritis. That's what I'd heard.
That is more conquerable than having a damaged scaphoid where the blood can't flow around the bone and heal it. I think a lot of it, frankly, depends on motivation and your will to continue with the sport. And that is also driven by what you have to ride. And so a lot of it's up to Aspar. Aspar can change their pathing, and I've seen this over the years, as to what they put into a particular rider or class at the drop of a hat. And it's unfortunate sometimes. I've seen it firsthand going back, but in the paddock, going back almost 10 years now. And so I think a lot of it depends upon what kind of support they're going to give him.
Mm.
So I will leave it at that, and you can read between lines if you want to. The second rider on that team currently is the final 250cc champion, that being Hiroshi Aoyama. Will he stay? Probably.
Yeah, he doesn't. I can't see him being a hot commodity for other teams. So, yeah.
You know, his trajectory when he won that 250cc championship, the final one, against Marco Simoncelli. I think a lot of us were on a Honda, no less, that, you know, hadn't really won because the KTMs have been dominating everything. I think a lot of us were like, wow, this is going to be so cool.
Yeah, well, the big problem was is that when he came up, he was obviously with the Interventon team, and then he right. and then he broke his back at Silverstone, so he was out for most of the season.
But still, I think we all had... you'd be happy to admit that we all had high hopes. And I figured when he got back on the bike that he'd do well. But then he didn't, and we watched him drop down to World Superbike, where he struggled even more. He got the opportunity to come back, and things just kind of stalled. And frankly, he's a really nice guy. He's been on the show more than a few times. And it's frustrating for me to watch him be so... politely frustrated in MotoGP. So where will he go? I don't know. But again, he's a Japanese rider in the paddock. And so I suspect that they are getting a little bit of help from Torna.
Yeah, much with some of the more exotic nationalities, so shall we say.
Yeah.
I think Dorna provides a bit of a kickback.
True. Carry on.
So the next team is NGM Forward. At the moment, they're obviously running basically last year's Tech 3s. Colin Edwards has started using the new Harris-built frame, and this weekend, Alish will test the Harris-built frame at Catalunya. To be honest, I can't imagine that Alish will want to use that new frame. He said that he was very happy with the current state of the bike. I imagine that NGM will probably continue down a similar path of using Yamaha engines, either with old Yamaha frames or their own frame for next year. Obviously, Colin Edwards has announced he's retiring. By all accounts, it looks as though Simone Corsi will be replacing him. Simone Corsi has already tested the bike. He's very favoured with NGM, so he'll probably replace him. As for Alicia Spargaro, I can't really see him staying with that team because I can potentially see him going to Suzuki. Maybe if he can get some money out of the team, he'll stay. And just continue to, you know, try and fight for that top four with some more support. But, yeah, again, that could be an interesting one. They're constantly kind of rumoured to have money troubles, so who knows when it could all come apart at the seams for them.
I'm sure they'll finish the season now.
I mean, they'll finish the season, but who knows if they'll last another year.
Yeah. Another one. PPM, Paul Bird Motorsports. It's a very valid question that you ask. Will they even be around, and what bikes? Their focus has shifted, as you well noted, out of the MotoGP paddock at this point. I don't know, but it kind of makes you wonder if that might be the paddock spot that Suzuki will take.
Both them and Iota, they've both not had stellar results. Iota's obviously struggling a lot for money, not being able to run Leon Camier.
Yep.
So those are the two teams that seem to be really, really rocky. And as you say, Suzuki could potentially take one of their spots.
Yep.
Then we get to Avintia Bluesons. They're another team that, you know, they'll maybe be around, probably. I can't really see Hector Barbera keeping a ride, and Mike Domeglio has not really set the world on fire. Dominic Agata is apparently testing the Avintia bike on Monday at the MotoGP test in Barcelona, so he seems to be getting his fingers into a few MotoGP pots. Then Cardian AB, I imagine they'll stick around, and Carol Abrahams will still totter around on a production Honda.
I wonder what they're going to do with that bike for next year.
The production Honda?
Yeah, I mean, if they'll actually give it some stick.
Yeah, it's meant to be similar to how the NGM bike is now, in that it's a It's kind of like last year's factory bike, but with spec electronics.
Yeah, I just hope Honda kind of kicks the bike in the ass, if you will.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
Yep. One of my favorite teams in the paddock.
Yes, Mark VDS. They're rumoured to be looking to make a move up to MotoGP. It'll probably be with the whole Yamaha engine, custom chassis, like NGM. Tito Rabat, they'd probably bring him up with them. If not, Tito Rabat could perhaps go to Tech 3 or one of those other teams. But you'd imagine that Mark VDS would be very strong. Lots of the team is obviously made up of ex-Kawasaki people, so they have a lot of experience in MotoGP. I can also see them perhaps bringing Mika Kallio up with Tito Rabat. Mika Kallio obviously has a fair bit of experience in MotoGP. He also raced for a Michelin semi-sponsored bike in the CIV series as a wildcard, and he won both rounds. And with Mika Kallio's experience, I imagine that Michelin would probably be looking at him for some tyre feedback. So that could be another reason for him to move up.
Just for listeners out there, CIV is the Italian national champion.
Yes, it is.
Out of all that, Harry, out of your extensive review, what I want to see is a line chart with riders on one side, teams on another, and various colored lines going between each one. And you need to move that every week.
Okay, I will do that this Sunday after the race.
You're a student. I mean, that's the kind of thing that you could make it your closing project.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's summer holidays, so I definitely need some homework to keep me busy. So thanks for that.
All right, are we moving back up the page again?
Yes, back to listener emails. While you scroll up, I'll quickly read the email from Banked. That's how you say his name.
Yep.
So he sent in three different emails. I've kind of combined them into just one. So his first email was about Josh Herron. Damn, seems like a missed opportunity. Was hoping to see him do good. Maybe he's trying too hard. Hayes always said he was good at following, but lacks experience in leading from the front. Maybe he's trying to make up too much time at turn one. Obviously, Josh Herron has had a fair few turn one crashes. I'm sure he'll be okay once he settles down a bit. Hope so. I think he deserves to be there as an AMA champion. Having said that, can't wait for Cameron Bobier to make his way across the pond. Thanks for having me on the show. Awesome, yes, pronouncing my name correctly. Slight correction, not a first-time subscriber. I'm the first ever subscriber to Motopod and still subscribing. Thank you very much for that.
That is very true. Banked was the first guy to send in a subscription. So thank you, Banked.
Yes.
Yeah, very cool. More about him. He grew up in Norway, Norwegian dad, Swedish mom. He's lived in San Diego since 1997. I think he's an IT guy. Pretty sure. Yes, he is an IT guy. Once again, thank you very much. We're about to dive into a bunch of emails, and there will still be some other stuff left that is non-TT related. But what I want to do is give you guys at least one or two interviews from a couple of L-Man TT racers to give you a perspective on what they think about racing at the TT. And then we can come back and get more of your feedback about what you guys think about racing at the TT. So with that, roll into it, Harry.
Zoom, zoom.
Zoom, zoom. Jim Race here for Motopod with Brandon Cretu. Recently, not just back from the Isle of Man TT, participated in the Superstock, in the senior, in the super bike, for Split Last Motorsports. Are those the only three bikes you got on, even though they were kind of the same bikes?
Yeah, that's the only classes I got out in this year. I was a super bike, super stock, and the senior, okay. Unfortunately. But yeah, it was that's the only ones they're eligible for.
Cool. Have you ever tried to chase down a super sport ride there?
I had a 600 ride on an MV this year. I had it all lined up and fell through back in April, and yeah, after that happened, I just kind of, I didn't want to pursue it much more just because I wanted to focus on, the effort with Spit Lab. We had a lot invested in it, and a lot riding on our success with it, so I just wanted to concentrate on that. But yeah, it would have been nice to have more seat time, obviously, so that's definitely something to look at in the future.
I thought it was pretty cool because from what I know, and I've talked to you a fair amount, you kind of engineered this whole thing, dude.
Yeah, I mean, I can't take all the credit. I mean, I made the introductions. I kind of started it from the get-go. I definitely have to, give credit where credit's due from the get-go. And that's, last year I did put together the Macau deal, but I wouldn't have been able to do that without Ronnie Sainer and RS Racecraft. They got behind me when pretty much no one else, would. And that pretty much led to, our partnership with Spitlav. I've been the owner for years, and we've always wanted to work together, so it just all kind of fell into place after Macau. And, then after, this year we obviously put a lot of work in, and, John at Spitlav put a lot of work into, working with Eric and getting us involved with EBR, and we were all just so excited to work with them because the bikes worked. I mean, they worked so well at Macau, and we put all the naysayers, to rest there, and we wanted to do it again at the TT, and I definitely think we did that.
Yeah, but you had to do it again, all over again.
Yeah, there's always the naysayers out there, but we just keep going out and showing them like, hey, we're taking a brand new bike, putting it out there, and we're doing really well on it. And I think it's definitely giving a lot of people a different opinion of the brand for sure, as far as in race trim.
It was cool because you guys came over with a fair amount of the AMA livery on it. And I think did a bunch of the practices on it, and I think you actually ran it in one of the races, did you not? You had the Hero livery on it and all that stuff?
Yeah, we were kind of going for the whole, like, MotoGP-ish test look, from the beginning. At first we had the all-carbon bodywork on, and then, then we ran the AMA bodywork. That was actually the exact bodywork from AMA with all the Hero and Amsoil livery on it.
Yeah.
So we obviously wanted to run that in support of EBR and Hero and Amsoil, since they are such a big part of the whole, the whole program and the whole company and what they're doing. It all kind of worked out. We, chose some different liveries for different races. The Superbike race, we ran the plain carbon with the Fun 88, which is one of our main sponsors for the event, and they're a sports book and casino online. Basically online betting company out of Hong Kong.
You're never going to get any hardcore race fan that isn't going to love seeing a shitload of carbon fiber racing around the track.
I mean, regardless, along with what's already on the bike, but because they have the carbon heel guards, carbon fender, like so much little carbon bits that looks so trick, and then you add on the carbon bodywork, and people were coming by and they were just like drooling over the bikes. everyone there. Even it was so funny, the Mugen team that McGinnis and Anstey ride for the TT Zero race, they bring over a box truck full of like 10, 12 Japanese guys. I think, I don't know if they ship them over in the box truck or they fly over separately. but these they're such great guys, amazingly smart and build amazing Mugen bikes. But they were coming over and they were like, every single one of them was coming over to look at Eric's bikes, and they were getting down on their knees, looking at all the little bits and pieces on them, looking at all the engineering that Eric puts into them. So I mean, that was cool in itself. Like, they're not going and looking at the Kawasaki's and the Hondas. Like, they don't care about those. They came over to look at something that was an engineer can look at and take really respect and admire.
It was very funny because as soon as the bikes got set up, even before you guys had finished putting up the canopy, Mark Miller, your teammate, who we'll have on maybe next week if he can pull his thumb out. love you, Mark. Started sending me pictures of, like, close-up pictures of, as he puts it, like, how Sano some of the bits were. And I'm like, holy crap.
Yeah, I mean, the detail that Eric put into these bikes, I mean, it's just, when you really stop and look at them, and especially the bikes he built for us for the TT, I mean, it's just unreal, the little attention to detail that's in every part of the bike. And, like, you look at it and you're like, oh, that's why he did that. That's why he did that. Like, there's a reason behind everything that's on the bike. And, to take something and design it completely from scratch in your own design, they're not taking some frame company like Spondon or, these other frames and stuff in a motor in it. Eric designed his own frame. Everything is his own creation, and he's doing it all himself. Like, they have some other, you know, guys in World Superbike now. I think they have Bermuda, and they took Bermuda's, you know, doing all right in World Superbike, but all they did was stuff a BMW engine in their frame. So it's not that same ingenuity that Eric is doing. Like, he's really, you know, it's the thing, you know, he's daring to be different. Well, he's really the only one who is. You know, it's something that everyone at the TT saw, and they, like, everyone loved it.
So there was a total of the bike you raced, both at Macau, and here at the TT, it was the EBR 1190 RS. No, yes, yes. RS. But in reality, what you raced was the EBR 1190 RS SP, which nobody else has raced before.
That's a good question. I know it's the 1190 RS. It was similar to our Macau bikes.
But it was a little bit more trick.
Yeah, it was a little more trick. It had a few different pieces, a few things swapped out. It had a really trick auxiliary tank on it.
That was the one up behind your butt.
Yeah. So basically, the tank itself, I mean, for normal purposes, for whether you're on the street or racing, the fuel is in the frame, and it holds plenty of fuel to get you around a normal racetrack. However, the TT is not a normal racetrack, obviously, so it requires anywhere from 22 to 23 liters, like, depending on your bike and your fueling. It requires more fuel than any standard bike would carry. So most bikes blow out the tank, or, you know, have, like, the HRC tanks and the Hondas, they actually extend down into the subframe.
Right.
But there's a way to modify them and make them bigger, whereas the EBR, there's no way to do that because it is in the frame. So the TT gave us a dispensation to allow an auxiliary tank, which are normally not allowed, to be mounted under the subframe with a line that fed into the frame. And but we still had to maintain the maximum fuel, which was, I think it was like 23.5 liters or something like that.
Okay.
And basically it was gravity fed. It just fed it right into the frame. So as the pressure from when you filled it up, the pressure would fill up the auxiliary tank, and then they would, you know, drain, you know, at the equal rates down into the fuel pump. But that was like a super trick little thing, is they had to relocate all the stuff back, you know, into the subframe or further up in the bike. So they put a lot of attention to detail on the bike when they build and for us for the TT.
I'm trying to picture how you would do that, because you're doing the overhead fuel feed with the BP4 cans into what is essentially a false gas tank.
Right.
And feeding into the frame, but it's also got to get back to the my God.
That's what we were initially worried, that it wasn't going to fill fast enough to get through the frame and then into the auxiliary tank. But when we filled it, it wasn't any slower than anyone else's. Like, we were able to fill just the same rate as everyone else. That was the initial worry, but that was something else that, you know, we put to rest. Everyone came over and looked at it, and everyone obviously was super impressed with the, with the bike and engineering. But, we always had to prove a few things to people that, you know, it would, you know, be able to fill up fast at pit stops, you know, do a quick rear wheel change, you know, just the things that people weren't sure of. And, you know, obviously the fueling, that wasn't even an issue as far as the pit stops. You know, we were able to do refuel just as fast. I think it was like 45 seconds for the refueling. And we were able to get the rear wheel, do a rear wheel change. Both Mark and I did a rear wheel change in the senior race.
Cool. All right. So talk to me about your races.
My races. I started in the Superbike race. And unfortunately, in the Superbike race, I stopped. I didn't really, technically didn't break down. I was able to ride back. But I did stop on the second lap right around...
I think you had a pretty good story about that. Didn't you have to, like, borrow some gas money or something like that?
Yeah. I made it. Where did I make it? I'm trying to remember where I made it to. I want to say it was...
I thought you said it was Crosby or something like that.
Yeah, it was further than Crosby. I think it was Ballacrane. I made it all the way there. And then, I stopped for a while and was watching the races. And then I was able to continue around. But basically, I lost my clutch, and I thought it was a clutch issue. Like, I wasn't sure what was wrong, but basically when I stopped, I was able to get it, you know, get it going again, and I was able to ride it back on the coast road back to the paddock and wait all day.
What were the symptoms?
Basically, I couldn't, like, when I would come off of like a really long straight and I would go to decelerate and grab my downshifts, I would pull the clutch in, and then it wouldn't shift out of gear, and then I would lose my clutch because I draw a clutch, so the clutch level would go soft, I would lose my clutch, and you know, I'd just have to kind of coast it, or either keep it in high gear and stay on the track, or coast off, which I did just for, you know, safety reasons. You know, obviously I could have made it around, but I would have been going a lot slower without being able to be in the right gear, so I just decided to pull off.
On top of that, you had no engine braking?
Right, which, well, the bikes don't have that much engine braking to begin with. You ride them a lot like a two-stroke, to be honest. And you can actually adjust the engine braking with, you know, the software that EVR has on the bikes. You can adjust the engine braking a little bit. I know Ronnie had told me about it, and we played with it a little bit when I tested with him before Macau last year.
Yeah.
But, the engine braking is actually not that much to begin with. So it rides a lot like a two-stroke. So you carry, like Mark will say this, the bikes carry a ton of corner speed, so it's like they feel like a 600 to ride. Like, actually, Mark and I would watch onboards of 600s before the races and before practices, because I felt like that's where, like, you ride them more like a 600, like, as far as corner speed. You know, it's a different dynamic on the bikes, for sure. You have to ride them a lot differently than a normal 1000.
There's a lot of people that try and slag off the front brake on that thing. Your thoughts? Because
if you blindfolded someone and put them on that bike, they would never know the difference. The brakes are just as good as any other super stock spec bike. Like, you take anything off the showroom floor, Honda, Suzuki, Kawasaki, anything like that, which all have tremendous brakes to begin with. This bike is right on par with them, if not better. And I mean, obviously, it's not up to the spec of a World Superbike level Brembo system, or, you know, equivalent to a Brembo, because, you know, it's just the caliper technology isn't quite that level, and that's not, you know, a secret, but the braking itself is completely on par with any other super stock spec bike or off the showroom bike that anyone would buy and race, you know, at the club level or even the national level. It's just when you get up to like that MotoGP high-end World Superbike level, the braking is a little bit down compared to those other high-end systems that cost, you know, umpteen thousands of dollars.
would they notice a difference from the lesser amount of unsprung weight on turn-in?
I noticed the bike on turn-in at low speeds, like if you were on a normal track and you're in, you know, second, third, fourth gear, the flickability, or, you know, how fast you can turn the bike, is definitely outclasses all the other bikes. Like, even Mark would say, we're riding on the mountain, and certain sections you ride on like a short course up there, and the bike just beats the other bikes hands down in the turns. Like, it just, the chassis is rock solid, and that, I think, the front brake and how the fuel is in the frame and keeps the center of gravity really well, it really helps the bike, you know, switch. You know, you can just flick it left and right so easily. That's definitely a strong point of the bike, is how nimble it is. Okay. And that's one thing we experienced in Macau, because Macau's so tight, and you're up on the mountain there, mountain portion of Macau, and it just turns so well. You know, even if you saw my onboards from Macau or Mark's,
yeah,
like, we were crushing everyone.
No, of course I didn't watch those.
Yeah, we were crushing everyone in the turns. Like, guys on BMWs and Kawasaki's, like, they would pass us on the straights, and they would get a little bit of a gap on us, but not that much. But at, you know, in the turns, we would catch right back up to them.
Yeah. Okay. So tell me about the bike, and then we'll get back to you. And
right. I'd like to talk about me more.
No, there are a couple of things, because I do want your views, and I want the listeners to know your views, because there are very few people. That being two that have raced a bike around the Isle of Man. What didn't you like?
Well, one thing I'll say that everyone thought we were going to like that wound up not being an issue was the top speed. We had, I mean, I had zero issue with top speed there, and we unfortunately didn't capture my one lap, but we got marks on board from his practice lap on the Wednesday before the senior, and he did like a 1:22 or something like that. He did a decent lap, and he was passing. He passed, I think, Stephen Thompson on the Bathurst BMW.
Yep.
Passed him on the mountain mile on the straight, like no problem. Like I think we proved that the bikes are not like. I mean, if you're gonna prove anything at the TT as far as, you know, a bike's capabilities, top speed is one of them, and how well they, you know, stack up to the other ones. Now, backing up to a super stock spec bike, you know, a normal bike that a person would race or ride, these bikes are right on par with everything else, or cool. with top speed. Now, obviously, the super bikes from, you know, the Tyco super bikes and Honda TT Legend super bikes, yes, we were down on top speed with those, but, you know, those weren't the bikes we were racing against because we were technically a super stock spec bike racing in those other, you know, the super bike in the senior class.
No, I mean, you're essentially building a middle of the road compromise for the classes you're going to run.
Right. Yeah. So we didn't build it as a super bike. It was a super stock spec that we raced in, you know, classes above ours and still did amazingly well. So yeah, definitely that's one thing we proved wrong about the bike. Now, things that stuck out to me on the TT course, mainly my gripe and Mark's gripe was, and we couldn't narrow it down to what specifically was the issue, but it was with high speed. Under, you know, when you're on acceleration and you're at high speeds, getting the bike to turn and change direction. So, not the lower gear stuff, not the slower stuff. It was the high speed, like on the mountain mile. Like you're making little changes to your trajectory, little subtle changes to get the bike to turn and, you know, just thread the needle on these roads. And it did not want to do it. And I spoke to a lot of people there, and we were trying like different spring rates, different suspension settings. And none of it really seemed to solve the issue. Some of it seemed to, it was like putting a Band-Aid on a cut. You know, we weren't stitching it. We were just putting a Band-Aid on it until we could get to the hospital. You know, I think that the real issue after talking to, actually it was Slick. I don't know if you met Slick when you were there.
I did.
Yeah. He said right away when I told him what we were doing, he said it was that aerodynamics. The aerodynamics of the bike are perfect and great if you're on a short course or like even Macau. We did not notice a single issue. But at the TT, when you're on prolonged periods of, you know, high speed, the front fairing on the bike, actually, it's a fairly low front fairing. It doesn't tip. Like, if you look at, if you would sit that bike side by side with a lot of other bikes, the fairing doesn't kick up. It, like, goes right into your shoulders. Like, it's a long front fairing where the windscreen attaches to. It's long and it's low, and it goes right into your shoulders where it doesn't kick the air up over your shoulders.
Hmm.
And at really high sustained speeds, that created an issue because it was basically pulling on your shoulders, and it was not only creating an issue with high speed, you know, turn and turn in, but it was creating an issue with wheeling, like not wheeling coming out of corners, like every 1,000 does that. It's just something you have to ride around, especially if you don't have electronics. It was, you know, hitting little bumps at high speed, and because you're basically constantly pulling on the bar because the wind is forcing that you to pull on the bars, you know, at all times, it was just basically causing your wheelie all the time.
So you're trying to turn quick and the front end is too light, and so it's pushing the outside.
It's pushing you out and it's wheeling a lot where places where you wouldn't normally get a little wheelie, but you were getting big wheelies because, you know, the wind is pushing your shoulders so bad that you were pulling up on the bars all the time.
Yeah. So I could see that in that little short bit of Mark's. And what I saw him doing was when, like down Sulby, when he would come over, when he was coming up onto normal wheelie bumps that had a turn right after them, you could hear him backing off so he could keep the front end down. And then he'd get back on it gradually as he was coming out of it. You'd laugh because you could, I'm sitting here doing the motions.
Yeah, I mean, You could hear, you know, in his video, you could definitely hear it, and both Mark and I, you know, we had the same issue, and I narrowed it down after speaking to Slick, and that really made me realize that it was just simple logic, because I noticed it on the bike when I first started riding at TT, you know, the first week in practice, I was like, you know, I would, in the slow stuff where you normally are kind of working, the bike was so easy to ride and it wasn't tiring. It was on the fast stuff that the wind was so bad on my shoulders, it was wearing, like on Salty Straight where usually you're tucked in, you're relaxed. It was wearing me out on Salty Straight.
Yeah.
Which, you know, any other, you know, most other bikes that wouldn't do that. Now, again, all that is a simple, like, so a lot of bikes and a lot of riders, whether they, you know, whether people admit it or not, they make custom bearings for the TT that maybe make the aerodynamics a little bit better because the high speed. So, like, on the Hondas, they use these giant windscreens and, you know, they just do different things. Even the Kawasaki's, that CX-10 has this windscreen that looks like they, you know, took a barn door off something and strapped it on there. You know, and we even had Zero Gravity made custom screens for EVRs for us.
Yeah.
So everyone gets those made, and some people actually get custom front fairings that kick, you know, maybe have are kicked up a little more or out a little more just to like deflect the wind a little better, because there's nothing else like the TT in terms of like the aerodynamics that are required to, you know, keep a rider, you know, down in the bubble and, you know, under the wind.
There's not a lot of race courses that have jumps on them.
Right, or, you know, jumps, and basically you're not in sixth gear going over, you know, little bumps for like, you know, a mile straight. So it's just something that, no, you can't really, you don't build a bike specifically for that. And the bike's aerodynamics, like a Macau, zero issue. You know, those guys racing World Tour, like, zero issue probably with that, but at the TT it really stuck out, and, you know, we didn't have the, you know, capabilities of doing anything at the event. We tried a few things, but just nothing really worked to get the front fairing like just picked up a little bit, so it would just aim the wind above our shoulders rather than directly into them.
Weather was a bit contentious, and I'll pull you away from this for a moment because you and I could geek out on this, and I don't want to kill our listeners. we'll save that for another time, over a beer. Weather was a bit contentious the first week. You didn't get a lot of practice, but as the second week rolled in, it turned out that things were actually pretty fucking kick-ass.
Yeah, you know, the weather wasn't too awful. Compared to last year, we missed like half a practice week, and then they moved practice to like, we had two practices on Saturday, and then we had a race on Sunday. Like, yesterday was totally screwed, or last year was totally screwed up. This year wasn't too bad. You know, obviously things were delayed, things were canceled here and there, which is that's the norm for any TT. Once you've done two or three TTs, then you just come to accept the fact that you're probably going to miss at least one night of practice, and, you know, at least one race is going to be delayed. It's just the nature of the beast. But I had like 11 laps by the end of the first 10 or 11 laps by the end of the first week in practice, which is decent. You know, not having a 600 kind of hurt me a little bit in terms of getting laps, because Mark obviously was on that 600 and he was able to get, you know, quite a few extra laps in. But yeah, the weather was okay. The main issue came when we were having difficulty diagnosing our clutch issue,
right,
in the Superbike race, and then on the following Super Sock race, because we thought we had fixed it after the Superbike race. But obviously, there was no way we could test the fix before the Super Sock race because there was no practice.
Yeah.
Before then, so Monday came. I go out in the race, and we thought we had it fixed. And I get down to quarter bridge, didn't even make it, you know, to quarter bridge, and it just happened again. So I just pulled right off because I knew it wasn't, you know, obviously it wasn't going to fix itself if I kept riding around. So I pulled off and rode it. You know, I tore Douglas quite a bit in my 2 weeks there on a bike. I don't think that if the police in Isle of Man saw my, because I had a camera on my bike at that time, and I think if they saw me riding back through Douglas, I might have gotten a couple fines.
But I thought that was supposed to be the return road.
But you can ride, you're allowed to ride the bike back through the city if you have the insurance, which I did, but you have to, you know, you obviously have to follow the traffic laws, which I may or may not have.
I believe that video needs to be released, my friend.
But other than that, I didn't get as much seat time as I, you know, wanted to, which I think overall led to me not, you know, achieving my goals in terms of a lap time. Although I did just realize, you know, obviously this year my goal was a 120. You know, that's kind of like that mark where once you get to that, you kind of start, you know, getting up there with everyone and, you know, being recognized as, you know, riding decently around the course. And I did like a 118.6 from a standing start, which was my personal best ever. But I found out actually yesterday I was looking at my split times on the website, and I did during the senior. If you looked at my sectors, I think from like two of the laps, I did 120 mile an hour lap. If you would give my ideal lap based on my sector time. So I'm capable of it. I can do it because I've done it. And every sector I've done what I needed to do to get that lap. I just have to add it all together, and I have to make it happen next year.
Yep, all about putting it together. All right, more serious question because this is going to be hitting closer to home. And somebody that I know that you knew fairly well, and of course Bob Price as well, passing away. But I know that you've partied with Carl Harris. Great loss.
Yeah, it's one of those things that's always unfortunate because we all love it, and none of us are gonna stop racing there. But it does often oftentimes some of our friends pay the ultimate price, and it does suck. I feel I think he has two kids and a girlfriend, and we heard the news. It was obviously pretty devastating because he used to ride for Slav and BSV.
Yep.
So everyone in the tent knew him fairly well. I had talked to him. I'd met him a few times in passing. Even Price, I didn't know him. But obviously anyone that loses their life there, it's always it brings a little bit of a dark cloud to the paddock, and everyone's obviously sad, but no one's gonna stop because we all know what we're doing when we go there. You know what you're signing up for. And, something happened to me. I wouldn't want everyone to stop what they're doing and stop enjoying life and stop enjoying what we all love, It's one of those things, we're all born destined to die. So, we're going to get sooner or later. Might as well enjoy what we're doing right
now. A lot of the conversation on the show the last 2 weeks, after the finish of the TT, has been about the pros and cons from a ton of listener feedback, and for the most part, nobody is. And everybody, of course, has expressed regret, but nobody has said make it go away. They've all said, try and figure out a way to fix it. You can't fix passion, and so I admire, as you well know. What you guys do, and so my hat is well tipped to you. Glad you did well. Glad you came home safe. I know, of course, that you will be able to put together a program for next year, and I think you need to get that same knucklehead back on your team again.
that's definitely the plan. We obviously have a lot of really cool things in the works. Everything went amazingly well with EBR, with Fun 88, our main sponsor. We really couldn't, ask for anything. Obviously we had a little hiccups, but first year for that bike ever being in the TT course, I think what we did was an amazing achievement. I mean, Mark did like 123 mile an hour lap. Ideal lap time was a 120. To take a brand new bike and go there and then perform that well, and then get it. We had one finish out of the team. That's an amazing achievement. And we really did impress a lot of people with how fast we went on the bikes, how fast Mark was going, how fast I was going, and the fact that our only issues, other than just tuning the bike and making it work, were that was it. We had zero issues with the engine, which everyone said the engines are going to blow up this or that. No. We didn't change a single engine out the whole 2 weeks we were there. We did every single lap we did was on the same engine.
Really?
Gearbox. Yes.
Well, take that, fishes.
Yeah, so whatever anyone wants to say about the bikes and the engines, they can go take it and shove their ass. Because, honestly, we did the whole, both Mark and I did the whole 2 weeks on the same engine.
I'm impressed because you and I were talking beforehand about some other engines that you were concerned that you might have to run, and I'm very happy for you guys that the EBR provided that kind of quality experience throughout the entire TT.
Yeah, and impressed everyone, you know, and how stable the bikes were. The bike was incredibly stable. Like, we were going down to the bottom of Bagaro, and you'd hit that bump at the bottom,
there's certain places, one where you totally bottom out.
Yeah, like, there's certain places in the TT that really test the bike's stability, and that's one of them. Like, when you hit that and you come out, if you don't get a wobble, like, or a little bit of a tank stop, the bike is incredibly stable. And this thing, I mean, it was like a tank going through. Like, you'd hit it, and it would just straight line and keep going. Like, nothing would upset the chassis in terms of, you know, giving you a little tank stopper. And yeah, I didn't get that at all. Like, last year, that Honda Road.
Yeah.
I mean, normally Honda's are supposed to be, like, the shit around there, but I tell you what, that thing was trying to kill me every second. And this year, that bike, you know, it was so stable. It's like, it held its line. It did everything you wanted it to do. You know, it's just like I said, we have to go with a bike that has zero data for the TT course and then try to, you know, put it up against these other people who have had data for years and years. You know, I think what we did is, you know, proof in the pudding that the bike is incredibly capable, a great platform, and it's only going to go better from here.
Cool. So now you're back at home flipping burgers and trying to figure out.
Yeah, sometimes I feel like that. You know, another day, another penny, or whatever they want to say, whatever they call it.
Well, you know, that's when you keep throwing, you know, euros into your backpack, and eventually, you know, you go, oh shit, I need some money, and pull them out.
I came back to work on Monday, so I'm already back in the daily grind, and, you know, TT Blues are in full effect. So, you know, I just missed the race and missed the camaraderie, missed the people, so. Yeah, hopefully.
You gonna try and do any short circuit stuff this year?
I do have a bike that my ex-teammate and good friend Denny Huff, he kind of made it, you know, worked out a little friend's deal with me to, he had it and he wasn't gonna race anymore, so I have that in my garage. I want to try to go out for a few rounds here and there just to keep seat time, but it's just with the, you know, how expensive it is, it's just really difficult to make happen.
Can I make a suggestion to you?
Yeah, what's up?
Why don't you see if you can't talk to Eric and put together an 1190 RX to run in a few rear rounds?
That would be awesome. You know, that's obviously something that I would definitely entertain. You know, obviously, we have a lot of stuff going with Eric, so. Yeah, that's not top of the list, but obviously if I, you know,
I'm poking you, going, dude.
Yeah, for Mark and I, obviously getting on that bike more is only going to help us and help our program. So yeah, it's something that is in you know, in the back of our plans. You know, and we have the bike still over with Spit Lab. They're over in Wales, so obviously, you know, we want to get more involved with what we have over there. It's just all a matter of kind of piecing it together. But I definitely will be out for few rounds here and there in the Northeast, you know, just local stuff for me, just to keep sharp, get seat time. We'll definitely be back in Macau, Mark and I, on the EBRs. There could be bigger things going on there as well, but obviously that'll be announced at a later date. And then it looks like I will possibly be Gary Johnson's teammate at the Classic TT in August.
Nice. Have you talked? Oh, really?
What's that?
Really? Okay. Yeah. Have you talked to that homo yet?
Say that again?
Have you talked to Gary yet?
Oh, yeah, the homo, yeah. I talked to him. I talked, unfortunately, I hear from him on a, you know, on a
hourly basis.
So, yeah, he's doing all right. He actually had to go back to the hospital today because he had to get a brace, the neck brace and a back brace on, but because he had, like, you know, he cracked a few vertebrae in his crash. I went to see him in the hospital after that, and you know, he's in normal spirits, normal Gary. But he wound up, when he got home, he had some swelling and some fluid around his spine, so they actually wound up putting him in a brace and a back brace and a neck brace to, like, get everything to stabilize and get the swelling to go down. So he has to stay in there for like 4 weeks, but then he'll be fine.
All right, cool. Sounds like there's a lot of really cool stuff coming up. And tell Gary I want to talk to him. I'd love to have him on the show, and love to talk about the win that he had as well.
Yeah, no, you know what? I will message him right now.
Okay.
I'll copy you on an email, and I'll email him and tell him to get him to ask on the show, because all he's doing right now, he's supposed to go to Thailand next week with his girlfriend, and now they're staying home, so he doesn't have anything to do but talk to you and be annoying to everyone else.
Good. Well, I'd be happy to be annoying to him as well. Brennan. Thank you for taking the time to talk to MotoPod. Hopefully we got everything in that you want to talk about.
Well, yeah, just wanted to say, you know, thanks to Split Lab and EBR. Definitely Eric for, you know, believing in us and, you know, getting behind us on this effort, and hopefully much more to come out of that. You know, thanks to Fun88 and RS Tai Chi at Motor Liberty for getting me sorted with gear for the TT. Yeah, so I definitely everyone that got behind me, I really appreciate everyone's help this year.
Cool. I didn't see a single Motopod sticker on any of your kit.
Hey, there was one on my helmet, buddy.
All right, I'll look closer. and you're going to be stuck with me at Macau, so best of luck.
No, you're going to be stuck with us. That's because you're going to be the one. You're going to be the one that's wanting to go to bed at 4 a.m. and no one's going to let you.
All right. All right, brother. Be well, and we will talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, Tim. See you.
Thanks. Cheers. All right, gentlemen, or gentlemen or gentlemen, I don't know yet. thank you very much for joining us on the show. Back to Bank. He says, Isle Manchete. Okay, love the Isle Manchete. But if this was run at any other venue, would a death or two at every race weekend be tolerated? Fuck no. It's insane. Keep the show going with vintage bikes, but keep the modern superbikes out of it. Banked.
That's a pretty interesting idea.
Well, we already have that at the Manx GP.
Yeah.
So, and I'm going to be the counterpoint this week to all of this stuff. That being said, I think I'll point out that one of the reasons that I am like that is not only the fact that I love the Isle Man for TT for many, many years, but I've been. And I think going has a tendency to modify one's attitude, even if they think that it's a dangerous race, and I still do, of course, to looking at it from a different perspective, because you talk to people who are actually doing it face-to-face, and it kind of changes where you're doing it. Anyway, I'm meandering. We're going to meander a little bit here. I want to read this. This is Martin. And I wish I could do his accent. Martin wrote in. He says, "Dear Motopotters, long-time listener, long-time co-host, non-subscriber, and occasional donor. I listened with interest to the latest episode where Skippy, and trying to think of something that's Lincolnshire-specific, sausaged, oh, Martin, I may laugh all the way through this, discussed various topics and thought I'd add my tuppenny worth. The Kevin Schwantz wrist injury had been a chronic problem, if my memory serves. I recall watching him winning a race, I think it was Donington, but I may have been superimposed the number 34 Suzuki onto the track in some kind of memory warp. And during every straight, he was taking his left hand off the handlebar, dangling his arm down, and shaking his hand as if he was trying to remove his glove. Pretty awesome step, but it clearly got too much in the end. Very great shame if Nicky H., that being Hayden, develops arthritis at this age, as I believe the only cure is a replacement joint, and I'm not sure they can do that with his wrists. Ouch. Fits quite well with what we were just talking about. Back to the Simoncelli chats. The Simoncelli discussion reminded me that he was far from popular in a number of places. A Catalonian 09, he was enthusiastically cheered, but only when he crashed at the end of the back straight. Yeah, remember that. I remember getting very angry that so-called fans would cheer a rider crashing, but he had, not long before, punted Barbera and Bautista off at a couple of races. Then at Valencia, also in 09, he was booed after Ayama ran off at turn one, and it looked as if Super Sick might snatch the last 250cc title, but not only did Hiroshi maintain 11th place after he rejoined, which would have proved sufficient to win the title, but Simoncelli, gotta remember this too, this is memory lane. Thank you, Martin, I appreciate it. But Simoncelli crashed out again to the uproarious cheers. So although he was very popular with lots of folks, it was by no means universal. I'm not saying he shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame, but I just wanted to balance the idea that it was due to popularity alone. I was quite critical of him myself, and I don't believe it have ever won more than the odd race, but he was, without a doubt, he's tough to stumble over your words, Martin. A magnetic character and a genuinely passionate racer who could also laugh at himself, and it was impossible not to like him. Despite the recklessness with which he sometimes rode, often as someone else's misfortune, I can't forget the maybe I'll be arrested comment, which was brilliant, and it was. Remember that press conference?
Yeah, that was brilliant and very tense in the that week and the weeks after.
It was tense for everybody except for Marco. He was like, it was like the whatever. And at the Silverstone Peacock Conference I attended in 2010, when asked for any advice you could give Maverick Vinales and Mark Marquez, pole sitters in 125 and 103 respectively, he said, "Sure, slow down, guys. Don't be in such a hurry." Which had the assembled journos hooting laughter. And he was always great at press conferences. Finally, on SICK, I'd have said that this most blatant bit of banditry. Martin, give me a break here. I'm nab you read these next time. Was punting Ayama up the last turn at Sepang. He launched him. And I agree with that. That was one that I was like, good. Back to GT. I was tempted to dive into the TT debate after a Twitter chat, which included Carolyn Sells, female racer around the aisle, but I will restrict myself to saying that I'm in passionate favor of freedom of choice, provided that the choice is truly free. I can't help but think about when the TT was part of the GP circuit, and it took riders of the stature, and therefore power, of Sheen and Agostini to refuse to ride there before it was dropped from the title race. If riders feel the need to race there for their own personal economic need, then that's merely an extension of freedom of choice, and it's fine. But I would sincerely hope that riders aren't being told by BSB, WSB, or other serious teams that they have to ride the GT for sponsorship publicity reasons. I agree with that, and that's not happening at this point. Nobody's mandating that you have to ride the GT. It's purely a choice. Finishing out Martin's bit. Finally, the discussion about turn 11 at Sachsenring made me think of an off-season subject. Save that one for later.
Okay.
Sorry.
Martin emails like he talks, pretty much.
Yes,
it was a very interesting email, and he kind of touched on pretty much everything we talked about last week.
Next time I'm going to tell him to record it and send it in.
Yeah, I think he's away at the second in Qatar, so that might have been a bit difficult, but yeah, definitely.
I want to have him do one while he's flying.
Oh, I think that could be a bit dangerous for everyone involved. Exactly. A lot of interesting points. The Marco Simoncelli thing has kind of definitely brought up a lot of different opinions, both about Simoncelli and about what the Hall of Fame is and what it should be. It's in another email that we'll get to. Someone brought up that it's Hall of Fame, not Hall of Results.
Right.
And I thought that was quite an interesting point and something that I hadn't really considered from that perspective.
Sure.
You
want to go on to Devon?
Yep. Okay, so Nevin Power also sent an email. It's quite long, but here we go. Hello, Motopod, everyone. I hope you're... Nevin went to Le Mans. He had a wonderful time. He just wanted to share some thoughts about... there's a lot of discussion about BT Sport this year for viewers in the UK and also Ireland. I was left wondering where I could watch my MotoGP at the start of the season. BT Sport is only possible to get in... Nevin's Irish, by the way. It is only possible to get in Ireland on a very expensive package, so it was out of the question for him. Instead, I signed up to MotoGP and have been enjoying their coverage this season. It's not quite as high def as the television, but it's pretty close, and the amount of content available is impressive. I would definitely agree that the content available is impressive. Nevin continues. However, one thing bugs me. Gregory Haynes needs to loosen the hell up. There is no doubt that he is extremely knowledgeable about the sport and seems a nice guy, but he fails to be excited about much, and when he does, he's quick to rein himself back in. He's almost, dare I say it, like a schoolteacher. Nick Harris, whose voice grated on me a little when I first watched him, is a very good commentator who brings a bit of humour to the broadcast and seems genuinely excited about what he's doing. Dylan Gray, the Pitlane reporter, is perfect, technically capable, and again, has a sense of humour. This is the world feed for Dorna, so I know they need to put out a very professional image, but at the same time, it's not as if Dorna are fully politically correct. Just check out their Paddock Girls section on the MotoGP.com page. I thought Greg just needed some time to settle into the role, but he still has not done so. If I were up there alongside Nick Harris, I'd have a heart attack every second weekend, practically pouring liquid excitement down the microphone.
That's a very interesting metaphor.
Yeah. I don't know. The thing, commentating is a very tricky thing. Like, I know that for most sorts of commentating, you want kind of one commentator who's commentating and one commentator who's analysing. And I think Nick Harris very much feels that role of commentating. You know, Nick Harris also receives a lot of flack for being, you know, this old guy who doesn't really know what's going on. A lot of people think he's just this relic of a past, you know. He's always messing up names, forgetting riders, that sort of thing. I kind of find all that sort of stuff very endearing. But some people definitely don't like Nick Harris. I think that Gregory Haynes, I think you're right, he could perhaps loosen up a bit. But I think that he's still getting used to that role. He's only been doing television stuff for 2 years, and that's a really short amount of time.
And if you think about it, he's got some huge shoes to step into.
Yeah, exactly. Gavin Emmett is one of the best TV presenters, certainly in MotoGP, if not across all sports presenting.
Right. Yeah, interesting. We will point out, this is listener feedback. This is not us.
Yeah.
Because we've had Nick on the show, I don't know, probably 10 times at this point. So, carry on.
Then Nevin just kind of commented about the focus on BT Sport and how he would like to have Nick Harris on the show. As you said, we have had Nick Harris on. Hopefully we'll be able to get him again. And we'll try to talk a bit less about BT Sport in future. As
I know, because both of you guys are over there.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny. If I had more Americans on the show, we'd probably be talking about it about the same time, because our coverage over here is iffy. That being said, anybody that wants to have like killer coverage, you know, just watch
MotoGP.com. Their coverage is really impressive. You know, they have multiple cameras. There's almost every session is commentated. There's highlights, there's rider interviews, there's different edits of the races, there's a bunch of other bonus content. It's definitely worth the money, I'd say. Now we get to the mystery of who is Binky Winky. This has actually generated a lot more emails than I thought it would. Accusations have been flying everywhere about who Binky Winky is. Martin Darlington has been accused of being Binky Winky. Apparently, they both have a very similar writing/speaking style. And then you yourself, Jim, have also been accused of being Binky Winky due to being a Laguna favoritist and being American. So,
yeah, well,
do you care to comment on these accusations?
I replied me, I'll never do anything like that. And I would, but to be fair, no comment.
But yeah, no, definitely no one on MotoPod is actually Binky Winky.
Definitely. Do you want to read mine?
Yeah, sure. So there's this guy, Jim Race, who's occasionally on this show, and he likes to send in a couple of emails, and he sent in an email this weekend. And he was talking about the Isle of Man TT and all the hubbub that's kind of been caused by it. So he writes, I keep hearing the word banded about. That was referring to of the banning of the Isle of Man TT, which was in his email title. Anyway, so he goes on. So let's look a bit closer. Who could ban the TT? The Isle of Man government? Fat chance. The TT is their yearly bread and butter. Yes, but what if the Isle of Man residents protest enough? Won't the government have to do something? Oh, it's the residents' bread and butter too. The FIM? Well, they don't control it anymore. The riders quit going. The TT is their yearly bread and butter as well for many. Obviously, bread and butter, a common theme. Not a ban per se, but reduced TV viewership and an on-aisle spectator attendance. Well, that keeps increasing year by year. If you look back, the death rate per year has actually declined on average, especially considering the very bad 60s and 70s. I seem to recall there were 5 or 6 deaths in 1 year, maybe 73. They're just more visible now instantly with the internet and television. Just something to think about, Jim.
I like the way he thinks.
Yeah, I thought you might. Do you want to take this email from another sometimes Motopod host?
As you guys can well know out there in Motopod land, this stuff is generating an awful lot of stuff. All right, this is from Len Padilla out of Spain. Hey, Len. He says, hi, guys. Dave, mostly. And perhaps he didn't think this was going to make it on the show, but it is. I really enjoyed the last show, but I wouldn't be me if I didn't complain a little bit about something. The mental image of Dave in spandex and heels, mind you. That was brilliant, and I'm still enjoying it. He says, I think the characterization of those that aren't... I want to point out before I read this, this has probably been the crux of the biscuit, the tipping point of a lot of the things that we're going to talk about this week, because there's been... What's the term I'm looking for? We've been trying to figure out, and people have been trying to figure out why there is no gray area in a like or dislike of the TT, and why you can't like some parts of it and not like some other parts. So I think Len does a fairly good idea or way of explaining this. And he's a pretty smart guy. Take a deep breath. Wait, hold on. Okay, lubricate my throat. Cheers out there. Don't cut that out.
All right.
Len says, I think the characterization of those of us that aren't 100% fans of the TT was both inaccurate and dismissive. Anti-TT Brigade means it sounds like those that aren't for it are campaigning against it, and this simply isn't true. I have a love-hate relationship, not a love, but a love, actually, with the TT that goes back years. And while I may waver from one year to the next, I always come back to the same place. I feel like the TT has very little to do with good motorcycle racing. I think the reasons that many racers go aren't good ones, and I'm not really a fan. Rarely come out and have this discussion with TT fans because it usually isn't beneficial or educational for either side. Not being a fan is taken as wanting to ban the TT, and in my case, nothing could be further from the truth. I'm in favor of people doing whatever they want as long as it doesn't hurt anyone else, and for the most part, this describes the TT. This has been key to a lot of emails and things we've been talking about in the background, folks, so... Len describes it well, and it's very heartfelt. He says, the problem is that if one chooses to utter one word against the TT, the response can usually be described as, you're not the boss of me, you can't tell me what to do. And it usually gets worse after that. It's hard to have a meaningful discussion when simply wanting to have the discussion is taboo. So, take that in stride. And then we go on with a little bit more. He says, another issue I have with the world that surrounds the TT is a lack of self-criticism and perspective. After Simon Andrews' terrible accident at the Northwest 200, a woman wrote a letter to a newspaper. I'm sure we've all read it. I don't agree with her aggressive tone, nor with what I perceive to be her intent, but I think everyone would do well to read between the lines of the letter. She belittled the writers as leather-clad adrenaline junkies, and the most fervent fans glorify them as heroes and legends. I don't think either is true. Heroes put themselves in harm's way in order to achieve a greater good. As much as I like bikes, racing them is never going to cure cancer. Ask any racer if he thinks he is a hero, and he'll probably say no. Brutally honest racers will tell you how selfish racers are and what they're willing to do to keep feeding the addiction. If you take away the heroics and the bravery from the TT, I think that what's left is a very well-paid group of second-tier racers. I could go on and on, but I think you get my point. It is possible to not be a fan of real road racing, but also not be in favor of banning it. he says, but please, please, please don't take my arguments negatively or personally. I still love you all. Long time. Hugs and kisses, Len.
Yeah, good email. Len raised some good points. And Len, like with a lot of the emails, expressed his opinion very well and did it calmly and in a way that was easy to understand, which is always very, very important, especially with potentially sensitive subjects such as these.
I think Len just read that to the host, but he didn't write into motopodcast.com, so he might go, Jim! Anyway, I read that out for a very simple reason, folks. Because he skirted the edge of a lot of what's going on, and as everybody that listens to the show knows, if you've listened for long enough, you guys know that I'm a huge fan and a racer, and I've been around racing long enough to not only from a journalist's perspective see people pass away, but from a racing perspective at the same time have people pass away. And it's horrific. And I was never obviously in the same class, but I get the desire to go on. And it's not like you brush it aside. You honor the person that does it, and you go back to what you were doing, because that would be the same thing that they would do, would be to honor me if I'd been gone, and get back to the business of doing it. Because it's in your blood. Anyway, I could go on.
So Scott Baldwin, he wrote in on the Isle of Man TT as well.
And Scott writes in all the time. He's a long time friend of the show.
Yeah, I think he had an email read last week. Him and Dave definitely had a couple of emails back and forth the other week as well.
Yep.
But anyway, so Scott writes in, "My friend Pat Hennen never blamed the island for the crash which ended his career. My friend Wade Boyd has raced the island 15 times so far. He's heading back to do the Manx GP this year. He has never had a bad injury at the island. Should Wade be deprived of something he is good at just because Pat crashed? I don't think so. Every time a sportsman dies, a hue and cry arises from the nervous Nellies who will die slow diabetic deaths while steeping in pools of their paralysing fear. Ignore them. Continue competing. Racing brings the best out of people. I love hanging around racetracks because I enjoy being around people striving for excellence. There is a continual struggle between the forces of fertility and sterility. Those who choose to do must ignore the wailing of the impotent. Onward with the Isle of Man, something humanity needs to have around. Rev on, Rose Runner." Yeah, I thought that was definitely a very strongly worded email, but I think it definitely made Scott's point loud and clear.
Yeah, he's old school. Very, very old school. Not old, well, yeah, okay, he's old school. pop up to Mike Moynihan. Mike is another good friend of the show from up in Lake Louise, that being in Canada, Martin.
Okay, so Mike, after a long absence, I'm back. So long, in fact. I don't believe I've contributed since Harry and Dave became regulars. That is quite a long time, because Dave and I have been around for, what would that be now, like 9 months, something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway,
is it time to deliver?
Almost. So anyway, so first, going back to the good old days of Errata, Mike Moyhan writes in and says, yes, Alex Barros did ride a Yamaha in 2002 when the RCV 211V came out. Rossi crushed the competition, winning every race in the first 12 rounds, save 1 second and a DNF. During those 12 rounds, Barros rode the NSR and even put the old beast on the podium in Holland with a second. Remember, in 2002, it was a mix of old and new, with 4-stroke and 2-stroke racing against each other, and it would have been incredible if Barros actually won at Assen on the NSR. Then in the final 4 rounds in 2002, Honda inserted Barros on the RCV 211V. Results were instantaneous, with 2 wins and a second and a third. He got more wins than Valentino in the same span. Barros was a hot commodity. Yamaha snatched Barros up for the next season in 2003 and promptly sucked for the year. In the same season, Rossi was making noise about leaving Honda, that it was the man, not the machine. Honda said, "Leave and we will crush you. We can put anyone on the 211V and we will win." Rossi leaves the Yamaha in 2004 and Honda steals back Barros. Honda figures the only reason Barros didn't continue his 2002 form is because he was on the Yamaha in 2003. And for Barros to regain his winning ways in 2004, he was simply put back on the RCV. In fact, Barros got Rossi's vacated seat on the Repsol team, a full HRC ride. We all know how 2004 turned out for Rossi and Yamaha. Barros, he underperformed, not even winning a race that season. Mike then also requests that we get a McDoohan interview and an Aaron Slight interview. As you pointed out in an email reply to him, we have had a McDoohan interview, although that was quite a while ago.
And on top of that, it was at the TT, and Mick that was a very interesting interview. So I see Mick in the TT paddock, right? And he's walking by me, and I'm like, this might be my only chance for a while. And I went up and I politely asked him, and he agreed. And I'm like, oh shit, where am I going to do it? Because the paddock was noisy as hell. And we actually went into the media center, along with the two young ladies that were working there, the media center admission signing credentials thing. And they politely ushered themselves out and closed up. And so I had no agenda because I'd just stolen him from whatever mission he was on. And I started talking to him. The first thing I was going to ask him was about the GT. And the first thing that he dived into, this is just after he'd done his parade lap, was that he hated it. So there's another opinion. And when he hit that, I'm like, all right, how do I dive into the questions that I really wanted to ask about the years where he raced GP and dominated everything and had his legs sewn together and all that? I was like, so Mike, we will have a more in-depth one. Yeah, that one kind of tripped over itself. So anyway, carry on, Harry.
Yeah, and then he also requested an Aaron Slight interview.
I think that'd be fun. That's not the first Aaron Slight request. We've had more than a few.
Yeah, I'm not sure where you'd find Aaron Slight, but...
Yeah, you'd be surprised. I think Colin actually has his number. I don't think he sends him any Christmas cards.
I don't think Aaron Slight gets many Christmas cards.
Probably not.
Well, that's pretty much it for listener email. Okay, so now moving on to news. This show will probably go up after the first day of MotoGP practice at Barcelona, so many of you will probably already know this. But if you haven't watched MotoGP this weekend, Nicky Hayden will be trying to race at Barcelona. If he is unable to due to his recovery from wrist surgery, Leon Camier is on reserve to take Nicky Hayden's Honda.
I suspect that Camier perhaps will set a record for running in the most different series this year.
Maybe he'd have to do a round or two in BSB, I think.
Would you be surprised?
Yeah, I'd actually be pretty surprised if he did go back to BSB. I think if he was going to go back to BSB, he would have taken a full time offer, and I think he had several of those.
I think it all depends on if you want to ride.
Yeah,
not even a permanent ride, just ride a motorcycle.
But yeah, it looks like Sylvain Barrier will be coming back to World Superbike in Misano. So yep. Camier's desperately hunting for a full-time seat.
Yep.
He's meant to be teammate Daniello Petrucci. Was initially passed fit for a medical by medical exam, but has since withdrawn from the MotoGP round in Barcelona. He will again be replaced by Michel Fabrizio. Hopefully Fabrizio will be able to finish the race this weekend.
Oh, come on, give Michel a break. He may not be the fastest guy, but goddammit, he's a fun guy in the back.
I'm sure he is.
And at the after party, trust me. keep going. I love this next one.
Okay, so Loris Baz and Tom Sykes aren't the best of friends anymore. It seems that Loris Baz is not making too many friends in World Superbike.
I don't think Alex Lowe likes him much.
Yeah, as we'll get to when we talk about World Superbike, there was a bit of an incident in race one. Tom Sykes also spoke about in Donington at turn one, in I think it was race one, when Loris Baz touched him, which caused him to drop down the field. And this tension has kind of been building between Tom and Loris. I'm not sure if it's entirely Loris Baz's fault. I remember reading an interview where Eugene Laverty did not speak too highly of Tom Sykes, so I think that there's perhaps two sides to this story, as there are with many stories.
I think there's probably four or more.
Yeah, probably.
Carry on.
Yeah, so obviously last weekend... the show came out just after the last day of racing at the Isle of Man. Just to quickly update you on those results, Dean Harrison took the win from James Hillier and James Calton in the lightweight TT. That was Dean Harrison's first win at the Isle of Man. His dad also won one of the sidecar races, so that's pretty impressive that a father and son both won at the Isle of Man in the same week.
Just for people out there, because as over the years, the names of the TT races have changed in the lower classes. Lightweight TT is for essentially 650 twins. Here in the States, the SV 650 is by far the dominant bike of choice. Overseas, what we call the Ninja 250, Ninja 650. You guys call it the Care 6EN, I believe.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, it's Kawasaki 650 is by far the dominant bike. I think there was one SFB 650 that ran in the lightweight race. So a class of 50-something bikes, and there was one Suzuki and everything else Kawasaki. Carry on.
Yeah, pretty much. So yeah, that was the lightweight TT. Then Michael Dunlop won the senior TT from Connor Cummins and Guy Martin. Michael Dunlop, brother William, had quite a bad crash up on the mountain and broke his leg in two places. There's been a lot of writing in the press that, you know, Michael and William weren't getting along after they had a bit of a coming together at the Northwest. But during Michael's pit stop, the first thing he asked was, "Is my brother okay?" And immediately after the race, he said, "You know, cut through all this bullshit put out by the press. He's my brother. I love him. Like, I care about him. The only thing I wanted to know is if he's okay." And so that was quite a touching moment for Michael as well. And Michael continues to emerge to be, you know, the new hot property in TT racing, for sure.
Two years in on a track, four races won. We should mention that Bruce Anstey, in that race, on the last lap, set the outright lap record at 132-point-something. Sorry, I want to say 198, but I think it's actually faster than that. And if I got that right, well done on the memory. Maria Herrera will wild card this weekend at Barcelona. I think that's very cool. With what team again?
She will be with the Australia Galicia team, which she races with in the SEV as well. I think she's currently second or third in the SEV championship.
Okay. How inside of you, SEV?
SEV being the domestic Spanish championship, obviously.
Okay. And a little bit of news on the Suzuki 8-hour, and I think there's some more that I've got that I didn't put down, and we'll save for next week.
Okay. Well, basically, this bit of news is that Dominic Agata will be racing alongside Noriyuki Haga and Kageyama at the Suzuki 8-hour on a Suzuki, which is then why we kind of talked about him in relation to Suzuki for Silly Season.
Yeah. Are we there yet?
So we'll just quickly touch on on World Superbike. Did you get a chance to watch them or no?
No, not a thing.
Okay, well, we'll just touch on the major events. In race one, as we mentioned, there was obviously the coming together of Loris Baz, Tom Sykes, and Alex Lowes. Baz went up the inside and lost the front, which caused Sykes and Lowes to both come down. Sykes picked up a bit of a wrist injury, obviously not happy with Loris Baz. So yeah, that's kind of now created this friction between them. But from there, it kind of became the Aprilia show, with Marco Melandri, Sylvain Guintoli, and Tony Elias breaking away. Eugene...
But from everything I read, Tony was actually putting on a damn good show.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. He did well. But so those three broke away, then Eugene Laverty and Chaz Davies managed to catch up Tony Elias. Laverty eventually got third, with Marco Melandri finally winning on the Aprilia and Sylvain Guintoli second. It's also interesting to note that Eugene Laverty was racing with some broken bones in his foot. I'm guessing that he picked them up in Phillip Island when he had his crash at turn one. And another funny thing to note was that Eugene Laverty thanked Max Biaggi for upgrading him to either business or first class on the flight back to Europe. I'm guessing that was Biaggi saying thank you for letting him win that championship.
Funny.
Yes, definitely. And then Superbike Race 2, that was kind of, again, the Aprilia show. However, it got red flagged when Claudio Corti's MV Augusta decided to burst into flames and spit fluid everywhere. So that was no good for them. They obviously then had to restart. But again, it was Melandri and Gintoli away at the front. Melandri, like he always does, is very aggressive with those passes. Maybe a bit too aggressive, but, you know, everyone stayed upright. So that's all that matters. Tom Sykes.
I thought it was interesting that Savannah at the end, in deeper circles, thought that the last lap battle with Marco was brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely good for.
But no, I mean, he thought it was he thought it was good for him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which, considering it when he watched it, because I did watch that part of it, I was like, okay, that's a very honorable thing to say, because you got beat, but
yeah. Then Tom Sykes managed to salvage third with his bad wrist. Elias was fourth. Loris Baz fifth. That was pretty much it. I don't know what numbers were like for viewers at Sepang.
I heard the stands were packed. They're very wise there. They discount the tickets.
Yeah.
Because pretty much what it does is it builds the community of people that want to watch it.
Mm.
It's very simple.
Yeah, I remember for MotoGP last year, the tickets were sold out.
Yeah, they had them for. That you could get general admission for like USD $9.
Yeah. Yeah, because so. Price can sometimes be very difficult.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that too many locals go to the F1 race they hold there, put it that way.
Yeah, USD $90.
If you're lucky.
Yeah. All right, finish this out. World Supersport.
Yep, so World Supersport was won by Michael Vandermark, followed by Jules Cluzel. And Kenan Sofoglu, who finally had a turn of fortune. It was an unlucky race for Kev Coghlan, who failed to finish, unfortunately for him. So the title chase has now kind of become less exciting. Michael Vandermark is 33 points ahead of Jules Cluzel in second, and then behind them it's a bit more of a gap. So Michael Vandermark, definitely the firm favourite for the World Supersport Championship. As for World Superbikes, that's actually closed up a fair bit. Tom Sykes leads with 201 points, but just 13 points behind is Sylvain Gintoli on 188. Jonathan Rea is 22 points behind Sykes with 179. Loris Baz is only 31 points behind Sykes with 170. And Melandri now jumps up into fifth, but still 54 points down. So Melandri will definitely have to show some strong end of year form if he wants to gain that World Superbike title that has so far evaded him.
He's been close, but yeah. You know, I think Marco still has it. Is he a father yet, or was that Dipunye?
He has knocked up his girlfriend. The baby's on the way. Dipunye has not yet knocked up Lauren Vickers.
That's because I don't think they're ever at the same place at the same time.
No, he's off testing the Suzuki, and judging by her Instagram, she is off modelling, I think it was in the Bahamas or something.
Well, I guess they have separate beds.
Yeah. Why would you want to be away from Lauren Vickers? I don't know, but...
And we'll never have Randy on the show again. All right, let's take this silly thing and see if we can't put it into something that seems like a rather coherent show. What do you think?
Yep, I'm sure we can. I'll get editing right now.
Ladies and gentlemen of the Motopod family, thank you once again for downloading the show. I hope you enjoy what we've got, and frankly, I hope you really enjoy the racing that we have coming up this weekend. Typically one of the more epic MotoGP races that we have of the year. And remember, last year, this was the first track that Marquez crashed out of. We're still on, as you well know, Harry, quite the record pace, poles and wins so far. No hits, no misses, no losses, and it should be big fun. And here goes my body clock screwed to hell again. If you guys would like to donate to the show, please do so. Go to www.motopodcast.com, left-hand side of the page, about halfway down, a couple of yellow buttons, donate, subscribe. Feel free to do whatever you'd like on your own level. And if you'd like to write to us, as apparently we are more than willing to put your comments and commentary and opinions on the show, write into Motopod at motopodcast.com. And again, that will go to all the hosts. And you may well end up getting a name mention on here. Harry, thanks for taking the time over there in the Kent or something.
One day you'll get it.
I know. I've been writing on a post-it and, you know, stick it on the wall here. I think we should close this thing out. Hopefully you found a decent outtake in there. I'm sure there's a billion from the past that you can dig into. Anyway, let's go.
Yeah. Okay. See everyone next week.
Bye.